It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's once again time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder, and on the phone all the way from New Jersey, Zaz Hollander. Let us start with Zaz. Zaz Hollander, you are in, of course, New Jersey, as I understand. And so you're in what might be called the storm center. Tell us a little bit about that, because we've been reading about those kinds of things, and we're just curious. So tell us what's happening.
Well, what's happening here is much less extreme, I think, than what's happening in Boston, coastal Massachusetts. But what we have here, I grew up in central New Jersey. My parents live here still. It is really just wicked cold. I mean, it's single digits. I think it's supposed to go below zero tonight, and it's pretty windy. So you get a nasty wind chill, and we live in Palmer. We know what it's like when it's cold and windy out, but there are these giant old trees everywhere down here.
Right.
We didn't get that much snow. We got maybe 3 to 4 inches of snow and just lots of wind. But up in at Boston and coastal Massachusetts, the storm surge and flooding has been really bad up there. So this weekend is supposed to be colder yet. So we're heading into a cold spell, and then it normalizes back to Alaska weather, in the 30s or 40s.
Sure. So what you're saying is that this is doable. Certainly we have witnessed some imagery of places in Boston and other places where there's been a talk about significant cold temperatures and flooding and all the rest of it. Would you say you're able to get around and do things pretty much as normal there?
Oh, yeah, definitely down here. Things are cold, but definitely doable.
Okay. All right. And when you say cold, do you have a number to apply to that?
I think it was about 8.
Oh.
Single digits this morning anyway.
Okay.
But with gusts of like 20, 30, something like that.
Okay. Well, now, there's another aspect of this that I discovered because of all of the attention that was paid to Oregon with a change in the law about whether you could or could not pump your own gas. And what I discovered in reading the background on this is that, of course, there were only 2 states. It happened to be New Jersey and Oregon.
That's right.
And so tell us about the situation in New Jersey about pumping your own gas.
Well, I haven't encountered it because I stopped for gas a couple times and had it pumped for me. And, I have to say, I lived in New Jersey for, 18 years and then went to school in Oregon. So moving to Idaho was a shock back in the day. But, yeah, people here are used to sitting in their cars and having somebody walk up and you roll down the window and you pay less if you're paying cash. But somebody pumps your gas for you, so it's a big cultural shift.
So I remember. I have to go way back into my youth when that kind of thing happened. But it just sort of disappeared in other places. And I was, I guess, I may have driven through New Jersey and I may have driven through Oregon recently. But I'm flabbergasted. So Terry's here. What's your experience with pumping your own gas, Terry?
Until I moved to Alaska. So it is a cultural shift. I guess they're getting a lot of blowback from it. I'm not quite sure what, I haven't read the background on it, see what the impetus was to make it happen. But I got to say, it is nice when I go back to Oregon and you don't smell like gasoline and somebody comes up to your car and you hand them your credit card and off, it happens pretty seamlessly. So, maybe this is, I doubt that it'll be related to gas prices going down. Let's just say that.
Well, there's a lot of background to the story, and that was what was so intriguing, because apparently the change in Oregon only affects some rural counties, And there are still laws on the books that require attendance to be available when businesses are open and all the rest of it. And there was considerable discussion because there were people who were either older or disabled and so on that benefited from having someone who would do this. The other question I have, though, is do they also wash your windshield and check your oil?
Oh, I don't remember, Zaz. You probably
haven't. Yeah, that's not been my experience lately.
Okay.
It depends on the station, though. It depends.
It does, yeah.
Okay.
I think there's still a full service and a service.
Yeah, that's true.
you can
get your gas pumped at Newman's in Willow.
Yeah, I was going to say there used to be a gas station on KGV that did that too. So
yeah,
you paid a little more, but I know a fair amount of people that paid a little more.
Right. Well, so I'm wanting to turn to a couple of things. I have to admit to the listeners and to both of you that I spent part of this morning reading a book which has jumped to the bestseller status. And we're talking about Fire and Fury. One would say, well, okay, how did I get a hold of it? Well, I wasn't at a bookstore at midnight, but I did go to my favorite online book provider, and I found that, sure enough, it's there. It's available for downloading. And so what I did, and I didn't read the entire book. I didn't have time to do that, but I took advantage of the sample capability, and I downloaded the sample, which runs to about 50-60 pages. And so I read that, and I said, this isn't a bad read. I'm going to at some point get either the hard copy, etc., and read this book. Zaz, is there any discussion or comment or do you see anything in New Jersey about the book that has just come out?
I've been a little under a rock for the last week or so, so I'm gonna beg off on that question.
Okay. So I would say this. I also checked a number of the news reports, and in particular, for the listeners and for you and for Terry, there early on in the book there's a discussion of a dinner party, which had Roger Ailes, Steve Bannon, some wives, and a lady by the name of Janice Min, who has a consulting firm in California. And she was interviewed since she was there at that dinner party and was asked the kind of question that we would expect, because there have been some accusations that the author, Michael Wolff, is kind of a fast player with sourcing and getting things necessarily accurate. But she basically said everything that he described in that dinner party was right on, accurate, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to hear more of that. I read a pretty long excerpt of it yesterday, and it just left me thinking, I wonder what it would be like for the White House to get up and actually do the people's work instead of deflecting what's happened the night or in the middle of the night before. It's just sad to me. It's just another sad commentary that we've come to this point that that sort of thing's going on. That, you know, it was followed up yesterday with saying that they're not allowing any personal devices at all for White House employees to have, which means they can't have, most people these days have a business phone and a personal phone. That's not going to be allowed anymore. And it's just getting to the point where, you know, with the attacks on the press, and there undoubtedly have already been precursor attacks on this, that trying to get facts out and having everybody think that they're made up stories when in fact there's some pretty scary things going on just is not a place this country needs to be.
Well, also, there were some other reporters that had been checking with diplomats from other countries. David Ignatius, who's a reasonably well-respected reporter, was quoted as saying, basically, as he went to visit some diplomats to talk about their views of certain issues, international issues, he found them blurry-eyed and other-focused, because they were very much involved with reading the and talking about the book. This is an extraordinary situation that, if partially true, would presumably have an impact upon those other people from other countries who are looking on and saying, if this is a picture of what's going on here, are illusions about some kind of coherent set of policies coming out of the White House are going to be shattered. And the reason why I mention that is because there is a change that was announced by the Justice Department that seems to reach right here to Alaska. And I'm talking about a throwing away of the coal MOA, essentially, with those states that have legalized marijuana, saying the Justice Department and the feds are no longer going to look the other way. There was an immediate reaction here, Zaz, in response to that, and it was twofold. One, the chair of the Marijuana Control Board, a gentleman who's also the chief of police in Soldotna, immediately resigned, saying this was going to be too heavy a thing. And then all three of the congressional delegation from Alaska came out and said this was inappropriate. It was interference in state rights, and it was also done without any consultation. And what were people thinking? And so the reason why I bring that up is because it once again seems to say, is this a distraction, another one that's thrown out each day to distract from whatever? As the bipartisan response seems to be, what are you thinking, except to cause a distraction? Terry, any comments about that?
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see what the ripple effects have on this. All of our state legislators were fast to come out against it, which didn't surprise me too much, because we had a vote on it. We voted, like it or not, we voted pretty overwhelmingly to legalize it. And Governor Walker has been kind of always been sort of a voice for that states' rights and trying to keep states' rights preserved, and this is such a trampling of that. It didn't surprise me at all to see their reaction. I don't know. Zaz, you followed the marijuana board and followed those stories a lot. You probably have better insight than I do on this one.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess the reaction that I've heard is twofold, and one is not really that surprising. Jeff Sessions has been clear from the start about his views on marijuana, and our delegation voted to confirm Jeff Sessions. I mean, then on the other hand, it's is this grandstanding? What does this really mean? Well, obviously, some people in positions of importance on this issue in Alaska feel like it must mean something because they're taking very drastic steps in reaction to it.
Yeah, and there has been some interesting observations about the need to privatize prisons and how Jeff Sessions is connected to that. There's all kinds of thoughts on it. But I think the marijuana industry, with eight states now, I think with legalized marijuana, right, the pushback on this is going to be pretty hard.
Especially since one of those states is a rather large one.
California.
We're talking about California impending, if not already accomplished, vote in Vermont. A number of people from the states coming back and saying, whoa, this is a classic confrontation that involves states' rights. And this also, and this is what makes this thing so multifaceted, there's also the ongoing discussion about whether the president has confidence in his attorney general, is this a distraction from his dissatisfaction with the attorney general?
Well, and it's also, certainly opposite of what he said when he was running about preserving states' rights on things. I think the other thing it's important is that, you know, it's kind of a message to Congress. You're going to have to start going to work. You're going to have to start taking on some of these issues, because once that happens, then, you know, there's actually a law against it, and the Justice Department has to follow that.
So let's come back here from the polar vortex and the spinning around in Washington, D.C., to something that is more understandable. And that is, we know that legislators are getting ready to go back to Juneau. And there are varying groups that have met with the legislators from the Valley, and in particular, both the school board, which has done this earlier. In December, legislative priorities were established by the school board for the Metsu School District, and they seem to be pretty clear. They're not surprising in any way, but they are there. And we know that there has been a report of the meeting that occurred between other people and the legislatures, particularly people from the Assembly and so on. And there seems to be, in general, a continued concern with crime. This has not gone away. And, of course, recently, while you were away there in New Jersey, Zaz, there was an incident which seems to highlight, again, a number of the facets of concern. And I'm talking about a situation where a woman made a 911 call requesting assistance from her because her husband was of some concern. And he later on determined had a background of domestic violence. There was not a response by the troopers until after she had been killed, as it seems. And that has provoked a number of concerns, and the troopers themselves are in the process of an investigation of their process of response. And of course, it covers everything. It covers the criminal justice system, whereby an individual who had some record of domestic violence, was he properly treated? How does that work? How do you both prevent and protect and go on from there? Terry, did you have any comment to make about that issue?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's just a sad upon sad situation. And I don't, Zaz probably may know more about this too, because of, you know, she interacts with those bodies more. I mean, they have a tough job. I know cops, police have to go into domestic violence situations. It's just not a good deal. That's where they risk their own lives. But, you know, having said that, domestic abuse is a huge, huge problem in Alaska. So maybe you have some insights, Zaz.
Yeah, I mean, I am aware of the particulars of that case, and I've been working today and yesterday, and we've been back at work and from here. And I don't know if what happened to Amy Smith is the woman who was murdered allegedly by her husband, Tony. I don't know if that's an illustration of rising crime in the Valley as much as it is a continued problem with responding to domestic violence incidents, and in this case, it sounds as if the troopers aren't responding to media requests about the decision, that decision point at 2:30 in the morning when she called from her bathroom because she was afraid of her husband, and troopers responded and didn't arrest her husband. We don't know what they saw when they got there. We don't know what, if any, evidence there was. It sounds as if she was afraid because of his past history, which was documented in, you know, court view, which anybody can access. But the troopers had also been to the house twice in December, twice, you know, in the 30 days beforehand because of potential issues. If it's an issue with rising crime, it might be only that these troopers, it was New Year's Eve day, you know, 2 a.m. on a busy night, and there aren't enough troopers anymore. But I think it's probably a combination, and it's a really difficult issue. And I, you know, hopefully, if nothing else, once the troopers finish their investigation, those results will be made public.
So, Zaz, how do the domestic violence rates in Mat-Su size up to the rest of the state? Do you know that?
I don't know. I don't know that offhand.
Interesting to find out.
Okay, I think the sense I have is because of the focus, whether you're at a borough assembly meeting or you're talking with legislators or coming up to the upcoming legislative session, even coming off the changes made from 91 to 54 last year, this issue of the areas outside of cities, outside of Palmer and Wasilla, and this is where this event occurred, out toward Big Lake, and I think is a, it's kind of a spark of a reminder, and even if the numbers don't suggest that we have the highest rate of domestic violence, this puts a point on the need. And the question will be, with legislators, since we've had the initial discussions, presentations by the president of the Senate, the Alaska Senate, and the head of the House coalition, who have still taken diametrically opposed views toward a budget solution that involves increasing monies that would be available for the budget. It doesn't bode well for this upcoming session that there will be additional funding. Terry?
Yeah, I think it's just not one thing here. That's the problem. I mean, you know, you could say the city of Big Lake has voted twice to become a city. They could have a police force, but again, that has to be funded and has to be funded locally. And that's gone down hard every time it's come up. You do have the problem with funding, but you also have a lack of positions. Last time I checked, there were some 40 positions unfilled at the four state troopers. And how does that connect with the loss in defined benefits? I mean, are we really attracting people to these law enforcement jobs? Because, you know, if you don't have anything but a 401k and you're putting your life on the line every day, how does that affect it? So I don't think it's any really one thing. I think a total neglection on the part of the legislature in either fixing that problem or providing the funding, because it certainly does. You know, I live in the city of Palmer. I have a mill rate that covers my police and fire service. Out in the boroughs, their mill rate is not part of that because the borough doesn't have police power. They rely on the state. So it's just more of that shifting of responsibility from the state off to the communities, where there's, for the borough with no help, with no police powers, don't have any really opportunity to do anything about it.
So let us shift into our last topic here. I've noticed a picture in the paper of an assembly member, Randall Kowalki, who has said he's going to run for Senator Dunleavy's seat because Senator Dunleavy is going to be running for governor. And that leaves, of course, two question marks out there in George Rauscher and David Eastman, who are already in the legislature and may view this as an opportunity to move into an empty seat. Terry, what do you think about this sort of beginning of the political maneuvering?
Oh, it's just musical chairs moving around at this point. It's really hard to say. What is going to be kind of interesting is, I think, and Zaz, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Randall Kowalki's up for the assembly this time, too, to run. So he may have to make a decision there, although he could drop off out of the primary in July and still have time to file. But I think there's just, it's all for amusement at this point. There's just so much shifting and moving around and still a lot of unknowns. Zaz, you might have some better input than that.
I don't know that. That sounds accurate to me.
Okay. Well, the snow has fallen, and Palmer and the environs, in fact, most of South Central here, is a winter wonderland. Temperatures are, for you, Zaz, just a reminder that when you're finished with the deep freeze and you come home, you'll be facing the need to dress appropriately for the weather. We're expecting temperatures probably around 20 degrees here. So that should be pleasant. And no snow projected for the next week. It's just going to be just a very nice part of our winter scene. So I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming into the studio today, coming through the snow.
Happy to do it. Be safe out there.
And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for taking a moment to call in from wintry New Jersey and sharing her perspective on things as well. Thank you, Zaz.
Free home, Zaz.
Sure thing. Send us some warm weather, please.
Okay, we'll make that happen.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.